coverage of E3 2013, which of course is actually covering day two, since we started with day zero. We're just that awesome. I'm Andrew. I'm joined by Leftos.
Hello.
And we're joined, of course, by Ben.
Oh, hoi, hoi.
Now, we said yesterday we didn't have a lot to talk about, and we still managed to go for, what, an hour and 40 minutes?
An hour 42, yeah, something like that.
There is even less today, but we might throw out a couple of thoughts on the real NBA if we're running a bit short. But we do have a couple of points to discuss. And but gentlemen, not a whole lot really on the basketball games today. Nothing new. A couple of interviews, a couple of news snippets that we can go over. But a few promising items and things worth discussing. And we'll look at some of your reactions to the community since we've given ours at length over the last 3.5 hours, or however long we've 3 hours and 40 minutes in total of the last couple of podcasts. And once again, quite a few of you, quite a lot of you did tune in yesterday to part two. So thank you again, and thank you for joining us again today. And if you haven't checked out parts one and two yet, go back and do that at your leisure.
Or your membership at the site will be cancelled.
That's right. Yeah, you will be banned. We are we're that nasty these days. But so just to get to a couple of news items first, Game Trailers posted a video interview with NBA Live 14 executive producer Sean O'Brien. It didn't give a whole lot of new information. Just focused on the bounce tech technology, which was nice. We got to see a few close-ups of Kyrie Irving in the practice gym, and a few more explanations of what's entailed with the getting the ball off the hands with the physics. And also, he mentioned the online connectivity, the online experience. So definitely check that out when you have a moment. We've got the link posted on the site. And also, Steve Noah from Operation Sports posted some impressions of the game. He got his hands on it at E3, and quite positive. Guys, have you had a chance to read Steve's piece yet?
Yeah, I have. It was good. Well, written and clear and precise on what a lot of people were probably wanting to know a bit of, especially at this such early stage. Padre's also given some nice positive feedback as well. So I'm going to look into more into see if he's posted on anything on his site such yet. But
he did follow up with a couple of comments, a few further thoughts after tweeting and posting on the Pastor Padre Facebook page. There's a couple more in his initial impressions and hands-on impressions. But yeah, I mean, as we mentioned yesterday, those are a couple of guys who certainly haven't pulled punches with the NBA Live series, and after what's happened the last few years, you certainly can't blame anyone for being critical. I mean, if we're not critical and just accepting what comes to us, we're not going to get better games. So, you know, fair call, basically. But to hear them both offer positive impressions is very encouraging, even at this early stage. But there's still a lot to see, and they both made a point of mentioning that, which is spot on, of course. But certainly encouraging so far, wouldn't you say, Leftos?
Yeah, even from a competitor standpoint, being a gamer who grew up with NBA Live, I'm happy to be seeing them making a comeback, as I said yesterday, and getting so many positive reviews right now. And it only fuels, you know, my competitive spirit to make sure I do my best once I get there to, you know, make sure that NBA 2K still kicks ass, no matter how good NBA Live is.
Well handled. Well,
yeah.
Right through it to you. And it seems that there is a promise and intrigue and interest in the community this year. I mean, some people aren't happy about it only being next gen, and we obviously would have loved to have seen a PC version in our community, and hope, you know, fingers crossed that happens in future years, especially with the x86 architecture that that the new consoles are using. All we can do is keep asking for one and demanding one, I suppose, and keeping our fingers crossed and holding our breath until we pass out and bang our head on the coffee table, as Homer Simpson once put it.
To quote my dear friend Don Matrick, if you want to play basketball games on the PC, there is such a game for you. It's called NBA 2K14.
Well, that's true. or
I'm sorry, I had to do that.
Well, or if you want to pull out NBA Live 95, I mean,
yeah, sure.
And I might just make a roster update for it. And by might, I mean won't, because that one's a little too old. So, although my avatar in the forum at the moment is Derek Rose in NBA Live 96, so I went ahead and created him just for the hell of it, just so I could have an old school avatar. But no, I will not be. I'm looking at giving away the most recent ones. I'm not, so I won't be going back to that vintage. But in any event, yeah, I continue to be.
Actually, that I was just thinking that would be a good way to go out, if, like, you know, a proper retirement, and just do one last.
Last NBA Live 96 patch, yeah.
Well, the last patch that from the first game you ever modified, so it would be sort of like a.
I'll bring it full circle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll release a little update for every single game in the series. How about that? Just like, even if it's just like a little text update, something absolutely worthless. But look at this! I released a patch for every single game there is in one day. Yeah, that'd be a way to go out. But looking ahead, I mean the other thing that perhaps concerns people at the moment is that it's just the practice gym demo. But Benji had a couple of good points in the NBA Live 14 section on the forum.
It's
obviously easier to just pull that out of the game rather than have a working demo of 5-on-5 gameplay, especially if certain things aren't ready to show yet. And it's easy just to pull it out. And it's also easier simply to show things like bounce tech. Yep. So, but even with that, people seem to be impressed or at least intrigued. So. Yeah, so far, compared to last year, it's been a win for EA.
Yeah. And the point that Benji made, which, you know, I agree the most with, was that if you're trying to showcase bounce tech, if you're trying to showcase a new dribbling physics system, you know, you don't want players, you don't want people focusing on trying to win a 5-on-5 game just not to be embarrassed. You know, while others are watching and they have 2 minutes with the game. You want to give them the exact mode that's going to let them freely practice and, you know, get a feel for how easy or difficult the controls are and, you know, how they will be able to dribble. You know, it's low risk because the things you don't have ready yet, you don't show. And at the same time, it focuses on exactly the technology you want people to focus on, the technology you have to showcase.
Yeah, you got to crawl before you can walk. So it's sort of that, you know, start from the beginning sort of stages.
And not be distracting people with, as Benji said, assets that can change, like a presentation that they might record some new commentary or certain commentary might not be activated yet or whatever. Or certainly the rosters won't be updated. The rookies won't be there for next season. So all kinds of
things. And again, there's so much going on 5-on-5. That, you know, that people just wouldn't be focusing on bounce tech. You know, maybe a wrong accessory here or there, so, Core Q isn't working yet. Yeah, the game isn't released, you know, we'd have to have these kinds of discussions. I mean, the NBA Live 14 trailer came out and people were complaining because Rubio was wearing a red accessory.
Yeah.
I mean, it was blatantly wrong, but still, that's not the point.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not the point.
It's just
apparently
one of the last details they'll fix up, you know. Accessory, wrong shoe, jersey number's wrong, you know. Minute fix.
And apparently Steve Noah from Operation Sports mentioned that even accessories will be updated on a daily basis, which was weird to me because I didn't know Synergy Sports keeps track of accessories.
Well,
they used to?
In Live 09 and Live 10, when new updates and that came out, it probably wasn't directly done by Synergy. It happened on the Fresh Daily sort of
Fresh Daily,
I
mean, that would definitely be someone at EA watching the games or looking at the photographs from after the games and saying, oh, look, he's wearing a new calf accessory or a new elbow pad or whatever.
Yeah, so, like Marcus Stevenson, the former community manager and developer, used to take care of the accessory things, like especially in Labo 9.
He'd ask
around the community, you know, sort of see if there's anyone wearing anything different or changes and stuff. I remember seeing a lot of it on Operation Sports. So, yeah, there was community talk and people used to post photos saying, oh, this person wore this or started wearing this. So, yeah, that was how it was done originally.
That makes sense, and that's a good move on EA. But you know, it just baffled me that Synergy would be keeping track of accessories.
Synergy is
a stats based platform. Yeah. I couldn't imagine, you know, they're caring about, you know, Dwight Howard was wearing that arm sleeve and he shot that much better, so that arm sleeve must have magic qualities.
You notice how often he went left when he was wearing two arm sleeves?
So, or stuff like that. Stuff, you know, just for promotion, you know. Our new Adidas arm sleeve gave Dwight Howard 2.3% better field goal percentage from under the basket.
Yeah.
So if you want to score under the basket, you want our new arm sleeve.
Free throw percentage unaffected. But,
Single size of just three games.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Actually, I kind of had one of those games tonight with my shooting sleeve on my arm. Like, I couldn't hit anything. Mind you, I was getting tripped and pushed and no foul call, so that was kind of disappointing. But it was like...
Was Joey Crawford calling the game?
No, it was almost. It felt like it. Because, yeah, three times I was tripped and lost balance when I was taking my shots. And then another one or two times, this guy had freaking shoved me. Well, I was going up underneath the basket and that, and it was deliberate because he came charging down, and so I nearly lost my cool a couple of times. But yeah, then sort of last few minutes of the game, I sort of took off my arm sleeve, and then finally I hit my first shot of the night, and I was like, oh. So yeah, I just had one of those nights. So.
Yeah.
It was kind of the same for me when I was playing goalkeeper while playing soccer, or football as it's known in the other parts of the world. And I was wearing these gloves that are supposed, you know, to protect your hands and give you better grip, but they must have been really bad, overused gloves because we were playing, you know, 5-on-5 on rented fields that gave you, you know, rented equipment that pretty much was used over and over and over day after day for years before getting replaced. So I'm guessing my gloves must have been overused, because I was getting so pissed off that the ball would just slip through them instead of, you know, me being able to just grip it and stop it. So I just decided to go with my bare fingers after all.
And that's how you broke all your fingers that day.
Yeah. I haven't been able to go ever since.
But, so I know you've got some of the reaction threads open there, Leftos.
Yeah.
Did you want to highlight some of the community reactions?
Yeah,
not just NBA Live 14, of course, but NBA 2K14, which we haven't really got any more info since the next gen reveal trailer. But,
yeah.
But even so, people, we've been talking about it, so hit us with it, if you will.
Yeah. So what I see as far as, you know, Live and 2K is that people are, you know, just because I'm reading threads both here at the NLC and at Operation Sports, people seem to be holding back. They feel like they've been fooled by marketing in previous years, and it goes by, you know, EA promising stuff and then canceling for the past 3 years twice, and 2K, you know, coming out with a lot of marketing-oriented trailers and stuff that look like gimmicks, but, you know, focusing on stuff and then just, you know, discreetly not mentioning others that had been removed or not worked on. So people are kind of holding back, but still there's levels of excitement on both fronts. For NBA Live, what I see so far from the community is that people that were at E3 and have really positive things to say, and that has given NBA Live across all communities some positive momentum, which was, you know, more than you could say for the past 3 years when we either had no news or demos or leaked videos were doing their work in getting everyone frustrated and disappointed.
Yeah.
So It's way, like you said, Andrew, it's way more positive this year. There has been some positive momentum going from NBA Live. So even though the first CGI trailer didn't get positive reactions because of the body models and because it was pure CGI and stuff like that, EA's courage compared to other years to give people the controller at E3 and let them try out, even just in practice mode, try out a new technology and be there and say that, okay, we know that, you know, there is a bit of awkwardness there or that there is a bit of sliding there and we're going to fix it. So they seem more confident. And that, echoes around the community because the community has gone without positiveness as well. But, you know, given that, you know, we're still some ways away from November, I don't see people doubting whether NBA Live 14 is coming out anymore. So that's good because,
that's a big step.
step forward. Yeah, absolutely. I don't see these discussions popping up. I don't know if they're going to come up jokingly as we approach November. But so far, nobody's doubting whether Live 14 is going to come out. And that's pretty good because EA has stuck to the next gen and they seem focused on bringing something out, on making a good start on the next generation. And, you know, from the interviews, they're trying to be humble. They're trying to get the core game down and be able to build upon it and really impress the following years. So having Live 14, it across all communities that I'm watching, you know, it has positive momentum and that's good. And it's up to EA to build on that and get people that, you know, doubted them back to even try out the game. As far as TK14 goes, we've discussed this. You know, there hasn't been much a lot of news since the next gen reveal with LeBron talking and the big mouth and
video game James.
the video game James and the kind of tidbits that we watched. But what I see is, you know, resonating passion for, you know, and very positive comments on the next generation graphics. I haven't seen people say that I wasn't impressed by the graphics. Again, there's people that are still having doubts on whether, you know, 2K's focus on graphics means that other parts of the game have been neglected, and they're saying that I don't care about the graphics as long if this and this and this isn't fixed. But, you know, you have to take into account, we said this yesterday as well, that we're 5 months before the game is even released, and I don't think we've ever had a game trailer showcasing even tidbits of gameplay in what would be April compared to October to an October release.
Yeah.
You know, April was still patch month, until last year. So we're getting some good glimpses into the game, and everything that has been shown by 2K so far is very positive. LeBron jumping into the passing lane, Kobe reacting to the steal and immediately running back, the way that the jerseys... we actually took another look at the trailer before we started recording. The way that the jerseys cling much closer to the body than other years while still remaining dynamic. They haven't gone for a static model that's closer. They're actually going for a dynamic model that has better collision detection, I guess, and has less distance from the body. Shorts that are moving very naturally because that was another point that I saw. So people are still very much excited about NBA 2K14, about its graphics. So it's good to be able to get a glimpse. And it's no surprise that the first thing we're seeing as far as next-gen for a game that has had yearly releases so far is that look how great the graphics are.
Of course, you know? Yeah. Well, that's what you see, the first thing, the real first impression that you can make with a next-gen console. And even when we had the CGI trailers for the NBA Live 06 back in 2005, I mean, that was the thing, like, wow, this is... And obviously it looks dated now, but at the time... When you compare that to the last gen, it was a case of, well, wow, this is what we can expect on the next generation.
Mm-hmm. And it's I mean, kudos to 2K for having the courage to come out with actual gameplay footage and not CGI so early, you know. And that's, I feel, the main thing that they have over EA right now as far as showcasing their next-gen previews is that 2K already has shown even just small tidbits of gameplay.
Yeah.
While, you know, EA has... and it was gameplay with a pass and a steal and the reaction from both teams and facial expressions that expressed, you know, the intensity of the game, while EA has stuck to CGI as well. But it is as well to their advantage. They are showcasing, they are letting people have a taste of the actual game at E3, which 2K isn't doing. So, yeah. You know, on different fronts, if you are an E3 participant, I guess you can, you know, it's natural that you could be much more excited about live at this point, while the rest of us that are just watching and can only, you know, read, textual expressions of what the games are like right now and have only the trailers to go by, I guess it's easy to be more impressed by NBA 2K14. But as we've said, still very early in the preview season, but I'm glad that it's one that will have a lot of competition and a lot of back and forth between the two companies.
And we're both, it seems that communities are looking forward to seeing mm-hmm. more information on both games.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So it's really great to see, because it's been a while since the competition has been there, and both games have drawn that much interest and positivity. So this generation might be off to a good start. We can only hope and continue to watch, I guess.
Yeah. And as far as handling their comeback, I think that EA are making the right move so far.
Yeah.
I can say that much. Ben, did you want to comment on, you know, Live 14, 2K14, and the community reaction so far? You know, now that the competition is starting to build.
Yeah. Just glad to see that it has been positive then, as opposed to previous years. I know a couple of sites there was a lot of bashing even before any cancellation and that. So yeah, it's good to see even some of the harshest critics being
impressed.
Well, yeah, so that's what I'm happy for. And you know, in the end, we all win. That's all I'm going to say. You know, if we have two great titles, you know, we have that variety. And so, you know, if we're not in the mood to play one, we might be in the mood to play other. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's, as long as they both produce a good product, you know, first year probably never gonna hit the total mark, especially in a new gen console, because you're still learning the new tech and all that stuff. So, you know, something that's playable, got a few game modes, and at least some form of step up from previous years, and that, then we can't ask for too much more in a sense in the first year. So I think once they sort of get settled this year, I think we'll start seeing over the next 2 years a great improvement in the offerings that both titles will have. So
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, if there's nothing else on the basketball front, shall we move along to just a couple of other notes on E3 day two?
Yep. Yeah. Sure. Yep. Go ahead.
Before we get to the reactions, one thing that Jasmine posted today that he found was a list of the countries that are going to be supported by Xbox One, and mm-hmm. And Leftos, your native Greece is not among them.
am I not surprised at all. I mean, it took so long for Xbox Live Gold to get any kind of tangible features that would matter to me other than online multiplayer in Greece, that it was completely ridiculous. I mean, for a long while, you couldn't even register for Xbox Live without setting the country to something else other than Greece.
Huh.
So I really don't see. I mean, after Don Matrix saying that, if you know, there is a console for you if you don't have a consistent internet connection, that's the Xbox 360. Are they saying that these are pretty much the only countries that will be actually be able to make use of the Xbox? I mean, if you can't have Xbox Live, you know, that will it still connect to the servers and
get updates,
verify your games? Or are all other countries that buy the Xbox One going to get, you know, another coffee counter for their living room?
Yeah, they're another expensive paperweight.
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't. If it's just a misunderstanding and it's just that some features will be limited, but people can still get Xbox Live Gold, can still play multiplayer. Not that in Greece we'd be enjoying Netflix or Hulu Plus or whatever, but
TV.
You know, there is a switch on my remote, thankfully, that says TV, you know, and another one that says AV to connect to the external inputs.
I'm still unclear on that whole situation, you know. Watching the trade-in, the lending games trailer a couple of times, I'm still a bit confused on how that's going to work. I mean, do you have to hand it to him just like he did, or can you use both hands or two hands, or can you do it behind the back? Or
I don't know.
It's a straight up like trick shot pass, you know.
Yeah, if you get fancy, does the game not work on the other console? I mean,
I don't know. Kudos to Sony for not having too much DRM and stuff, but they're not good at making video tutorials. I'll say that. I'm still waiting for Jasmine video tutorial.
I did love your reaction in the Xbox thread where you just posted seriously. Because I've done close to 30 podcasts with you now, I can often read your posts in your voice in my head. And because you've had that seriously outburst so many times
seriously?
On the podcast, that's exactly how I heard it when I saw the post in the forum.
Yeah.
It's like when people post things like the Big Bang Theory's, you know, the Soft Kitty song and all that, and then it asks at the end, I bet you actually sung it. Instead, or sung it in your head, as opposed to just reading it.
There's just some things that stuck with you, that stick with you. Yeah. The same goes, apparently, Shadow Green loves it when I do, ah. So from the moment I found out about that, I make a conscious effort of going, ah, as much as I can. And she says, it's the reaction I get from thinking I'm being touched by Andre Drummond. So, about Andre Drummond, you know, he's one of the goofiest guys on Vine, and his latest Vine today was one that he's dunking over Chris Brown, so that made my day. but yeah, moving back to, you know, reactions to news of day two, I really don't get it. I really don't get it. And Microsoft really has to clarify what the countries that aren't in that list going to be missing out, you know, for the 100 people around the world that are still interested in the Xbox One.
Do the words not much mean anything? I mean,
yeah. I don't know. I really want a clarification from Microsoft. And Microsoft just keeps doing stuff that feels they need to be clarifying, you know? People keep asking for this or that to be clarified. They don't have a clear-cut strategy, and it's backfiring all the way to hell.
And it's just more arrogant comments, as we said yesterday. The attitude is just off-putting. No,
Don Matrick should have never made that comment.
Yeah.
No. Never. It was... I don't think if that... Or Adam Moore's comment was, which one was worse, you know?
Yeah, right. Good question.
probably in a way the Don Matrick one, because he said it more publicly in a sense. And he, I suppose...
Yeah, said it on the exclusive broadcaster of E3.
Yeah, so, you know, and it was directly from his mouth. So, yes, it was...
He was representing Microsoft. At least you could say, Adam Wolf, that the usual disclaimer, my comments here on my Twitter account are mine and not those of my employer, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
He's the Xbox chief. He's the employer.
Yeah.
And then I suppose if you look at it patriotic sense, he kind of disrespected the the nuclear submarine naval officer,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why make that connection? It's as if there's not enough countries around the world where people, like we said, you have a console. You have a long day at work. You want to go back. You want to just play. You don't want to care if the internet is down or if you don't have enough money to pay your internet anymore. You want to just keep playing. So if someone gets the Xbox One, as long as, you know, the moment they don't have any more money to pay their internet or that their internet gets disconnected, Xbox One, becomes useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And instead of trying to win some fans back, they make a statement that's so easy to spin off into, there is a console for you, it's called the PS4. That's the first thing about Don Matrick's statement. It's so easy to spin. And I was looking at, you know...
Or even the Wii U. I mean, how do you
feel?
Yeah. I was reading an article on Ars Technica, and they made a good point. They said that most people that are interested in the Xbox One already have an Xbox 360.
Mm.
Because most people that after this many generations of consoles, you know, most people that are, you know, or focusing from day minus one, not just day zero, but day minus one on a specific console, are people that you have won over your, you know, with your previous consoles.
Exactly.
So yeah. Most people that were interested in the Xbox One were Xbox 360 owners. So what Microsoft said to them is, do not buy our new console.
You're not going to persuade Sony
fanboys, you know, unless you have something very impressive. But you can't be kicking away fans that you've already won over the years, your very own fanboys.
And to their credit, some of the fanboys, the fanboyiest of fanboys, that's an awkward word I've just made up there. But even the most diehard fanboys, you know, they're the only ones that are really defending the strategy.
Yeah,
a lot of other ones are like, well, I feel cheated, and I don't feel my loyalty to the brand has been rewarded, so I will look elsewhere. And you know, as I've said before, I don't consider myself a fanboy. I've enjoyed having my 360. I'll still keep it around. I probably won't renew my Xbox Live Gold subscription after November, so it's actually quite good timing for me because that's when my subscription runs out, November. So, but apart from that, I'll be keeping it. But, yeah, I have no reason to pick that brand again. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was quite happy with it and quite willing to give the new Xbox a look, or, you know, everything that's come out of it, the one, you know, as a swinging voter, as the case may be, I know where my vote's gone this generation and possibly beyond if this is what they're going to do.
Yeah, but on other news, as far as Ben, did you have something to add? Sorry.
Yeah. Just on sort of what Andrew just sort of touched on. I mean, does this slap in the face remarks not only just affect this generation, but will it affect people's decision in the next generation? It was like where they'll still feel mistreated or let down, or again slapped in the face. You know,
I think so, because if we use just going back to NBA Live for real quick, I mean, use that as an example. There's probably people that feel burned by EA who will never buy an EA game again for whatever reason, and EA may put out let's say they do win the next generation. They do put out the best basketball game. Just hypothetically, you know, there will be some people who will just never touch it because they are that against the brand.
Yeah.
There are probably some people who will never buy a Windows PC again because they had problems with Vista, most likely.
And then Windows 8.
Yeah,
I wasn't a fan of Sony, to be honest. I mean, I wasn't looking at the PlayStation 4 at all because... First, you know, up to until, you know, the day zero of E3 happened, because for one, I thought Xbox 360 was a better platform in the current gen, and because two, Sony had done a lot of stuff that I was very pissed off about. We had it's quite some years back, but Sony had that whole DRM in their audio CDs, that that rootkit that installed in users' computers, and even antivirus software couldn't pick it up, and they were sued to hell for it. And then Sony, with various firmware updates, removed stuff that the initial PlayStation had. They removed the other OS feature, and they kept, you know, disabling and doing stuff. And they, with as part of firmware updates, where you couldn't skip them if you wanted to keep playing the latest games. So I wasn't really interested in what Sony had to offer, because I felt that, you know, I couldn't trust Sony. And even after Microsoft made those remarks about used games, I felt that there's no way that just Microsoft is doing that.
Yeah.
That has to be a deal between the two major companies, because if just one of them is doing that, you know, it's totally stupid. They're losing all their customers. So it only makes sense if, you know, it's a cartel, if it's something that Microsoft and Sony agreed upon in common, along with the publishers, standard, behind the scenes, to make it a standard of the next generation. So, but, you know, things didn't turn out that way, and Microsoft is going down a path that I really don't appreciate. PlayStation 4 seems like a much better platform compared to PS3 as far as, you know, development goes. They're using DirectX, which all the PC developers are very comfortable with. So it's going to be you know, the transition from, I made that point in detail yesterday, the transition from next generation consoles to, you know, having those games that come out in the next generation of consoles coming to the PC, I feel is going to happen much earlier than in the previous generation, because of the very similar architecture and because of these consoles not having, you know, very, very strong components.
Yeah.
You know? So, really, I feel that's resonating around the community, because we're also talking about the reactions of the community today. I haven't seen anyone, at least at the NLSC, stand by the Xbox.
No.
And say that, I'm still buying it, I still don't like what Sony has to offer. I mean, Microsoft comes out, let's get on with some more news from Microsoft to try to keep it short this day. Microsoft comes out and, you know, gives us the list of countries, which is terrible, and then we also find out that the two free games per month is only for a couple of months. It will only be until November.
Yeah.
So not only are those games very old compared to what Sony's offering, I mean, Sony's PlayStation Plus offers for July, I think it is, includes XCOM Enemy Unknown, which I remember talking about very recently in podcasts.
Yeah. It also includes Uncharted 3.
Uncharted 3, yeah, one of their flagship games of PlayStation 3.
Yep.
You know, one of the flagship exclusives of PlayStation 3. So not only is the games that Microsoft is offering much older, but it's only a 5-month deal. So it doesn't look good. And the only other thing we have as far as news go is that with the fall 2013 dashboard update, as Jasmine posted in the forums, all remaining Microsoft points will be converted to local currency to go with Microsoft's policy to give up Microsoft points and work with local currency.
That's probably about the most positive thing that's come out of E3. I do like that idea, because I just got some DLC for Injustice Gods Among Us, and got the season pass, and I'm pretty sure that if you work it out, I paid more on my credit card to get those Microsoft points than the dollar value that they're supposed to be, especially with the exchange rates and the standard cost across internationally. So that's one good thing, but that's a very minor thing, and at the end of the lifespan almost of the console.
And that comes with a 1-year expiration. Kobe Rules just made a very good point saying, unless you have more points that you'd ever use in a year, which I probably do. You know, there are people that kept, you know, loading their Xbox Live accounts with points in case something big came out on Xbox Live, Games on Demand maybe, you know, or a good arcade game. And now Microsoft is saying that all the points that we convert to your local currency, you have to use in 1 year, otherwise our money is yours and you got nothing out of it.
Yeah. So even in the best of news that they've delivered at E3, there's a...
They still find a way to shoot themselves.
There's a footnote that just has everyone shaking their heads. So
I don't know. I really don't know what Microsoft executives are thinking right now.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like there's a lot of players that we remember or see many years later because Michael Jordan put them on a poster. So, I mean, there's so many things that are going to be immortalized by memes that, the Xbox One will always live on in infamy.
Yeah. I guess it's earned that already.
I swear I don't know how Microsoft are going to try and put the spin that all press is good press out of this. Like, I don't know how they're going to put that.
We talked about it yesterday. I mean, there was an interview of a Microsoft executive with Kyle Orland of the Ars Technica, and all they're trying to use to justify what they're doing is that we're moving on to the pure digital era. Sony isn't, so people we're expecting a backlash. But there's backlash with every change, with every big change in technology. But people will see that we were right in moving ahead to pure digital.
But Sony's got the infrastructure and everything in place to be digital. It's just they've
been the first to implement day one digital. And not to mention that The Last of Us is the first PS3 game where you can download a certain percentage of it before you can actually start playing it. So They're ahead in that category in a lot of ways. Yeah. So,
and it's a transition.
The main response is you don't have to go pure digital. Why can't you do both?
Well, it's like Windows 8. You know, why get rid of the start menu that everyone's been using for 17 years now, something like that? Yeah. Windows 95, 17, 18 years.
Not make even an option.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very short-sighted on.
Windows 8.1 is bringing back the start button,
yeah,
but it's still going to lead to the start screen.
But that's still something that there's some familiarity there, and people have already made mods and hacks for it, I guess. But
all we're gaining is that instead of pressing the Windows key on your keyboard or clicking the lower left corner on your screen,
you're not clicking
a button that takes you to the same stuff that you didn't like in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft themselves brought out a mouse, a new mouse that has a Windows button on it.
Well, I mean, that's probably a good idea because a lot of intermediate computer users and the computer illiterate, or virtually illiterate, sort of struggle with keyboard commands and such.
Yeah, pressing one single button that has a clear-cut Windows logo on it is very hard.
But, you know, like I say, I mean, as someone who's worked in tech support and computer repairs and whatnot for years, I guess you have
more experience in that than I do.
I can tell you that a lot of people, the easy solutions, you know, can put it up there in red letters on the screen and it's still, you know, what does this mean? So what do I do? So, yeah.
Yeah. So in other news that came out of day two, one thing that Benji posted last night was that The Crew, the game we've discussed from Ubisoft, that's a massive multiplayer game, driving game that allows you full customization on your cars. You can take them apart, build them back up. And my favorite part is that it has the whole of US apparently to use as a playground with both a combination of on-road and off-road experience. So, a great, 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 great concept. I'm still, we've seen some gameplay, looks good. Driving model doesn't seem that, you know, realistic or anything, but I'm fine with that. I've played both Test Drive Unlimited and Test Drive Unlimited 2, and I really like that game that was published by Atari. Again, massively multiplayer game. And it had all of the island of Maui, I think. In the first game, great big map, lots of challenges. There was an hour-long challenge, which was amazing. The Crew looks really interesting, and it is coming to the PC, apparently, which is very good news. I'm really happy to see, you know, games. Was The Crew noted as a game that's going to be cross-generation, Or is it just Next Generation? Do you remember?
I think it's
Next Gen. I don't think it was coming to the 360 or the PS3.
Okay. I'm looking confirms the crew for Xbox One and PS4. So yeah, that, I'm glad to see next gen games, you know, publishers not being afraid to bring next gen games only to the PC at the same time with the same release date. That's really, really good. That means that we were right in thinking that the architecture is very similar. Developers are not having trouble doing cross-platform development, and that can only be great news for PC gaming, because there's no longer, you know, the excuse that, oh, we need to outsource to someone to port it to the PC, and the port could be a terrible unoptimized thing. But when you're using DirectX on the PS4 and DirectX on Windows, and the only difference is that on the PS4 you can do some further optimizations because there's only one graphics card and you code closer to the metal. When that's the only difference, you know, that's a great piece of news for PC gamers. And I'm glad to see a game that I'm really excited for, which is The Crew from Ubisoft, come to the PC the day it releases for Xbox One and PS4. And I'm going to pose a question. I don't know how much you've watched of live streams and announcements from companies, but I think I see a trend after day zero of E3, after Sony's press conference ended, and, you know, a few hours have passed, and, you know, people had reacted on Twitter and other social media. I think I'm seeing the PS4 mentioned a lot first, and then the Xbox One, as far as when the supported platforms are announced.
Yeah, and
which is interesting. I'm seeing EA keep to a weird. It seems that EA must have a deal with Microsoft, because I was seeing, you know, announcements for its games, and they said it's coming to Xbox One, the all-in-one entertainment platform by Microsoft, the PlayStation 4 and PC. You see the difference there? Where it goes out of its way to say how the Xbox One is an all-in-one entertainment platform while the PlayStation 4 is just that. So it seems that companies are already taking allegiances, and EA seems to have a deal with Microsoft, while other companies seem to have realized, you know, maybe have seen the backlash of that Xbox has received, especially after the PS4 press conference, and are, you know, sadly mentioning the PlayStation 4 first. Do you think that could be a thing, or am I just saying things, Andrew?
No, I've noticed it, and I've actually heard a couple of, I think Sean O'Brien actually, when he had his interview, said PlayStation 4 first, so that was kind of cool, but I think most of them are on EA's terms that are saying Xbox One first, and I agree. I think there is that sort of tendency to sort of who's the sort of more priority of console that they're going to support, I suppose.
Well, I know when I post the bulletins about the official roster updates for NBA 2K13, I usually mention something like, we'll come through automatically as long as your PC, Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, or Wii U is connected to the internet. So you can kind of get my preference. I mean, it's certainly
possible. It's all in order.
It's certainly possible. As far as mentioning the all-in-one stuff, I mean, it could show some kind of deal or preference, but at the same time, it might just be marketing. The Wii and the Wii U are not officially the Nintendo Wii or the Nintendo Wii U. That's the incorrect terminology. So if they've been instructed by Microsoft to introduce it as the all-in-one gaming, all-in-one entertainment system or whatever, maybe that's just...
But wouldn't that be a marketing deal across all companies?
It could be.
Wouldn't that show up in every press release ever?
It could, but some companies might just might not buy into it or give a damn, I guess.
Yeah.
It's certainly, I would not rule that out. I mean,
mentioned that as, you know, a tie into the rumors that EA might have, you know, a deal for some things with Microsoft Gamma, you know, for the next generation.
Well, it's certainly possible. I mean, I've mentioned Fallout a couple of times before, and although it's multi-platform, the DLC came out on the Xbox 360 first, a couple of months before the PC and PlayStation 3 received it. So little deals like that. I mean, the games may not be exclusive, but there may be little exclusive add-ons or pre-order packs, and I think we've seen some of that in the press conferences on Day Zero. Some of the specific extras for some games, I think, were mentioned, you know, an extra set of armor or something for an RPG, usually things like that, or an extra T-shirt, extra clothes, you know. It all comes down to my closet at the end of the day. So something like that, I guess. Exclusives that you can still play the game without, I suppose, or just maybe timed exclusives in the worst-case scenario. But, I get where you're coming from. It's definitely interesting that they've made that effort to mention that. But does the PlayStation 4 actually have any additional hoopla, like, you know, the ultimate gaming station, PlayStation 4 or something? Does it actually have an extra name to promote, even? Or?
I think the PlayStation 3 had that, because I was seeing Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, the gaming platform from Sony, the entertainment gaming system from Sony or something, and then the, you know, whatever other platforms there were, but I don't see that for the PlayStation 4.
Maybe they're just going with PlayStation 4 then. But
they are getting exclusive deals with like Ubisoft and an extra hour of gameplay and stuff.
That's
like
that. Right. Yeah, that's what I think of. Yeah. Not just extra armor, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to point out something. I just remembered hearing or reading about an article where Microsoft were really opening up their wallets and dishing out the cash to other developers to mention the market, or the Xbox One, and basically not hint at the PS4 just leading up to E3. So basically right after their initial announcement, that's when they started opening up their wallets.
And to show multi-platform games demonstrated on the Xbox One rather than the PS4 as well.
Yeah, and basically try and make no mention of the PS4.
Yeah. It hasn't seemed to work.
No.
Yeah.
And the other piece of news
money
that...
Money well spent.
The other piece of news that came out from, you know, me watching day two of E3, I was actually watching the live stream that Community 2K was doing, where various of its community managers are roaming the floor of E3 and doing interviews and stuff. And one thing that caught my attention, because somehow it had completely, I had completely missed that, is that NVIDIA is bringing out a gaming handheld this month called NVIDIA Shield, which will be Android-based. It is based on the Tegra 4 mobile graphics unit by NVIDIA. So it's going to be very, very powerful. It's Android-based, so it's going to be compatible with all games that Android supports, apparently. And it's going to have a cost of $349, but to further entice gamers, you'll be able to play all your PC games on it, but not exactly in the way that you'll be able to play all your PlayStation 4 games on the PS Vita via streaming, that is. So a gaming handheld that supports all the Android games and streaming from your PC, which has never been done before on a handheld or on a gaming handheld, and a price tag of $349. Does that entice you guys at all, Andrew?
No, not really. I've never been big on handhelds anyway, but yeah. No,
do you have an Android device?
I do, but just my Samsung Galaxy 2. But,
okay. Any games that you feel would could really make use of something as powerful as the Tegra 4? Because I'm feeling that, you know, the current games for Android need to, you know, the developers need to limit themselves to what, you know, the mainstream phone has.
Yeah,
or even the best phone out there. But at the same time, you have to wonder, is things like the Ouya or the NVIDIA Shield enticing enough for developers to invest on creating full-blown 3D games, AAA games on the Android platform?
Well, if developers are going away from the Wii U, which I know is not a handheld device, obviously, but if they're going to abandon a big company like Nintendo and a powerhouse in the industry, you know, is the market going to be there? I don't know. I mean, I like I say, I'm not a big fan of handheld games when it comes down to it. I either prefer to be sitting in front of a computer screen with the with a keyboard and mouse or a gamepad, or you know, relaxing on a lounge with a console, so and a bigger TV, so bigger screen. So yeah, I'm definitely, I suppose I'm not the right person to ask because I'm not in the demographic or the target audience, but
Ben,
I'm skeptical. Yeah,
okay, Ben, any thoughts?
I don't think the games on the mobile devices are good enough at this stage for such a device. Like, for me, definitely the PS Vita is more enticing. But who knows, maybe in about another year or two. I mean, the development and with the technology stance in mobile phones is jumping at a really rapid pace. So hopefully the graphic fidelity, the gameplay style and that will evolve a lot more rapidly. Like, a lot of games are just, I sort of just tap the screen and, you know, sort of build something like Simpsons Tapped Out.
Puzzle games or something like that.
Yeah, you know, you got your Bejeweled and all that stuff. So,
well, which are fine for that platform.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But for me, in the terms of things, and especially you mentioned the price of it, it's like, definitely the PS Vita has more interest for me at this stage. Mm-hmm. And for the services and that it's going to tie in with, obviously, the PS3 and the PS4 and that. So I'd be more looking out for that as opposed to the NVIDIA device at this stage.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like the price comes more out of the investment that NVIDIA is making rather than realistic market projections. Because when you have people that are either pre-ordering or starting to save for the next generation consoles in 5 months, I don't think that $349 for a handheld that has a strong processor but no games that can make use of it, and just by the promise that, you know, Android is gaining traction because the Shield is coming out and Duya is coming out, so developers will come to it. So, but, you know, even Nintendo believed that the developers would come to the Wii U. So right now it seems like a very expensive experiment, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be all that interested in getting a Shield, especially considering its price tag. If it was, you know, something along the lines of 250 to 90, maybe it would be a bit more enticing. But again, when I'll be spending just $50 more to get a PS4 that I know is going to have a great library, that I know is going to have great features, I know is going to give me 2 free games, you know, for an additional $50, do I want to spend $349 on a handheld to play Fruit Ninja Double HD? You know, it doesn't really seem that enticing. But, you know, just like Ben said, the jury is still out on what happens with Android gaming, because it does seem to be getting traction. So it will be interesting to, you know, to reiterate on this a year from now and see, for example, it's going to be interesting in all fronts. For example, 4 questions for each and every developer right now. Will Sony have screwed over gamers in any way, or will it have the position that it has right now? Will Microsoft have found some way to get back its audience? Will Nintendo have done anything to get developers back to the Wii U? And will Android gaming still be a thing, or will have the Ouya and the CB DOA. So it's going to be an interesting year, and it's going to be an interesting transition to the next generation for good and bad reasons at the same time.
Yeah.
I sort of wanted to mention something. You know how I made the prediction that the PS4 would support Oculus Rift?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've sort of found out a little bit of info on it. The PlayStation CEO loves the technology. At the moment, the PS4 doesn't support it, but it doesn't mean it won't in the near future. So there's a possibility that in the coming year, maybe, that they'll have an ability to support the technology for the PlayStation 4. So that'll be cool if they can get it to work. Because I know some of the Sony studios, like Naughty Dog and a couple more, have some software kits for it, like SDKs for it at the moment. So, and they've been liking what they're seeing with it. So I think, in the next year, or year after release, I think there could be some great strides in being able to use that technology with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited even by the sheer fact that, you know, we'll be getting a taste of it on the PC. So when it's done, and when there is a, you know, a cool game that supports it, I'll be more than willing to go out to a retailer to check it out and try it out. So if Sony is, you know, excited about the technology and is willing to look into supporting it in the future, really, really fun. But, you know, since we'll be getting on the PC anyway, you know, I could live on just that.
Yeah.
to be perfectly honest. But yeah, we've reached the hour mark. There have been some NBA news outside of E3. Do you think we should go through them, or do you think we should let them, you know, boil for another day?
No, we might as well.
Andrew?
Have a quick chat about that, of course, since we do have another finals game happening today when this podcast will go up. So in just a few hours. Well, the game will be in a few hours. The podcast will be up sooner. So depending on when people listen to this. But anyway, so there's as I understand it, a big series of basketball games going on at the moment. I haven't been following that closely myself. But, you know,
something called the Finals?
Finals, yeah. Like, sounds like the last of something. But yeah, the NBA Finals 2013 edition are underway. And so far, the San Antonio Spurs are up 2-1 on the Heat, and started out as a pretty. Actually, I don't think we've talked about the finals at all since it started, because it was So
not at all.
Just to quickly recap for those who may have missed it or would like to be reassured that we have been watching. Game one was a pretty exciting affair, with ended up 92-88 on a remarkable shot from Tony Parker that, as the replay showed, just beat the shot clock.
Yeah.
On a scramble play. Game two was the blowout by the Heat, and game three was the blowout by the Spurs. So, yeah, it's certainly been an interesting up and down series so far.
In regards to that Tony Parker shot in game one, I wasn't too sure if he was auditioning for Harlem Globetrotters or So You Think You Could Dance.
Yeah, he was certainly wiping the floor and cutting a rug on that play, but there was speculation. I've seen a lot of people still don't believe he got it off in time, but ESPN or ABC, I guess, had a really good camera angle from the top of the key that showed, when they went frame by frame, that it was at least a few centimeters out of his hand as it coming off. But wow, it was an incredible shot, and just the closest you can get to a violation without it being waved off. So, you know, yeah, very lucky by Mr. Parker there.
Agreed.
And then game two, the Heat just stormed away with it at the end of the third. LeBron was struggling for most of the game and then woke up towards the end of the third and had a dunk and started getting it going and hitting a few shots, and the rest of the Heat followed suit. Mario Chalmers, I think, was the top scorer, the leading scorer for the Heat in that game.
But Wade started off really strong in that game too, which is good to see.
But Wade has actually started off strong in all three games and then completely faded by either by the half or after halftime. But then of course, game three, the Spurs were the ones who ran away with it towards the end of the third quarter, and they just ended up with the third largest margin of victory in NBA Finals history by 36, that 36-point win. The other two, the championship-clinching game in 2008, Celtics over the Lakers, and the largest, the 42-point victory in 1998 game four of the Bulls-Jazz series, put the Bulls up 3-1. So, yes, I know my NBA trivia there. And the other thing, that the other statistic that was thrown out, well, there were plenty, especially with the way Danny Green and Gary Neal were raining threes. But the other interesting one that was thrown out is the Spurs have now played 25 finals games and never trailed ever in the final series. They've been tied, obviously, but never actually trailed in 25 games. And that's an NBA record, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
To when you talk about their dominance. And I guess this is one of the first times they've really had a really good opponent. Oh, no, sorry, the Pistons in 2005, of course, but the other three titles, perhaps not the best opponent. But, you know, you have to show up and play who's comes out of the East, so, you know, you can't take it away. You can make any team that makes it through a season and wins a championship has done rather well, so you can't take that away from the Spurs. But we've said it before, they are, you know, one of the most successful franchises in NBA history.
So, what I'm going to be making the most obvious observation ever in saying that what I'm seeing is that Popovich is being the better coach in finding ways to adjust and bring the best out of its bench and do things that neither Spoelstra nor anyone from the Heat is expecting. And LeBron James woke up for a half in game two to win it for the Heat, and then fell asleep and never woke up again. Because once LeBron James can't play the game, it's too much of a gamble, and it's not going to happen against the Spurs. Well, not when Popovich has gotten, you know, has gotten his game plan down, and it's working so well.
Well, you know, he had that triple-double in game one and the 18 rebounds, which is no mean feat, and pretty decent all-around game, even the loss. And he, as you
yeah,
said,
but
had that
but
stretch.
I'm saying that but, I'm saying that if LeBron James getting a triple double still has the Spurs winning.
Oh yeah. Well, the other thing which I was going to get to is he's also averaging 16.7 points per game on 38% or 39% shooting, which
yeah.
is not him at all.
No.
You know? And they've found a way to really take him out of the lane. I mean, have you seen a single lob to LeBron? The only one I can recall was broken up by Danny Green on a rather great defensive play on the fast break that wade through to him. You know, I've seen LeBron break free for a couple of dunks in the open court, but I mean that's such a big part of their game is the when they get out and run and the when Wade or Chalmers puts it on a wire and LeBron throws it down and finishes. And I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen him driving or getting the post game working. And I think he was 1 of 9 from outside the paint at one point in game three, or he certainly from certain distance from about 18 to 20 feet out and from 3-point range was about 1 of 9 or something like that. So they've really taken him out of the game, and you've got to give some credit to Kawhi Leonard, actually, who's done a pretty good job. You know, there's talk about whether LeBron's I heard he was injured or ill. I don't know whether that's been confirmed, but whether it's a combination of him not being at his best and the Spurs doing a good job, but or maybe a bit of both. But yeah, it may say James on the jersey, but that's not LeBron, or not the LeBron that we've seen the last couple of seasons.
Not the LeBron you expect to see in Space Jam 2.
Yeah.
So the way,
unless the Monstars have sucked his powers out as well, I guess.
True.
So after what happened with the Pacers series and the way the Spurs series is developing right now, would you say the Heat would win it after all? Because I don't see it.
Well, I'd pick the Spurs in five, and that's I mean, they're gonna have to win the next.
I'm just asking. Are you standing by your choice?
Yeah,
the Spurs in five.
Well, I will. I was going to say the Spurs, you know, one way or the other, but certainly, you know, I'll stick with five for now because they're looking like they can do it.
Mm-hmm. Ben?
Well, I've said before, you know, if the Spurs can control their tempo, control the passing situation, minimize turnovers, slow the game to their pace, then they got a really good chance. So, I mean, I'm still hopeful the Heat can win it, but I know the Spurs are a solid team, and with Coach Pop is one of the best coaches out there. So, I mean, an upset could happen. So yeah, I'll leave it at that.
But then is it really an upset? I mean, the Spurs, obviously, well, are a great team.
Well, consider how young and athletic Heat are in a lot of ways.
By the record, I suppose, they were the 66-win team. So, yeah. I guess. I can see that.
And, you know, the big three that they have, you know, they and considering they also had that 27-win game streak and all that. So
it starts to look like it doesn't mean a whole lot when they can't finish off.
Exactly.
I mean, if you can imagine if the Bulls went 72-10 and then lost to the Sonics in the finals, that would have been, you know, a huge collapse. So,
exactly. Absolutely. So, you know, a lot can happen. I'm still hoping that the series can go the full seven games, and I'm hoping that the Heat can win it. But at this stage, the Spurs are playing really well, so I can't deny their ability and all that stuff. So we'll see what happens.
Here's a tough question. Sorry, Leftos. If the if the Spurs win, or even if the Heat win, and the series proceeds pretty much as it's gone at the moment with everyone performing the way they have been, who's going to be the finals MVP? Because right now it looks like Danny Green.
No kidding. Yeah.
And who'll be the first to jump on him for the cover for the 2015 season?
The Danny Green, the Green Machine edition of...
Yeah.
I'm just taking a look at, you know, the finals MVP, not the playoffs MVP. Too bad I can't limit. I was taking a look at, you know, Basketball Reference to see, you know, the PER of the various Spurs players throughout the series.
I mean, I guess it would be Duncan or Parker because of their overall importance. And Duncan, even if Duncan hasn't been shooting so well and not been at his absolute best either, he's still been very good defensively and rebounding and everything. So he's still kind of the linchpin and an all-star player for them. So I guess it would go to him or Parker. And well, of course, Parker's now dealing with that hamstring injury, so we don't know how effective he's going to be the rest of the way. So
The problem is the game that the Spurs lost against the Heat, game two, nobody from the Spurs really made a difference. The only player to stand out from the Spurs roster was Corey Joseph, who in 9 minutes got 8 points on 3 of 3 shooting and 2 of 3 free throws, along with 3 rebounds and an assist. That's the only player that stands out from the Spurs for game two, and nobody would give finals MVP to Corey Joseph. But the Heat,
Patty Mills,
for the Heat seems such an obvious choice because the way the team is playing and the way LeBron is playing and the way that in games that LeBron decides not to play, the way they end up, you know, it seems like LeBron has proven to be the single brick that is holding the Heat together.
Yeah.
Without him, the Heat just fall apart.
Ways just disappeared. I mean, Bill Simmons noted after game three, if Mike Miller hadn't come in and hit those 5 threes, they would have lost by 50. So
Absolutely. So the Heat seem so overly dependent on LeBron. So if something magical happens and the Heat win it, it's going to be an obvious finals MVP choice because the Heat can't win it without LeBron. So if they do end up winning it, he will have won it for them. He will deserve the finals MVP. Yeah. As far as the Spurs go...
Sorry, to interrupt. You said if, because I remember you didn't make a prediction before the finals began.
I wanted to see how the first games go, and I'm going to say the Heat might win one more game, but that's it.
Okay, there you go.
Spurs in six.
Spurs in six, okay.
Yeah, but you know, the Spurs with the way Greg Popovich has been you know shifting his game plan around to throw new things at the Heat and catch them by surprise. It's going to be very exciting to see, you know, who ends up getting Finals MVP, because right now you have the cornerstones, which are Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, Thiago Splitter, who had started hot, you know, had an underwhelming performance in Game 3. He was good, but, you know, nothing to, you know, to battle for the top spot. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Heat somehow find a way to respond, if Popovich shifts around his game plan to something that's working once more, who will prove to be, you know, who will rise to greatness.
Yep.
Because pretty much right now, anything goes. You have the cornerstones, but when you have Danny Green coming out with 9 of 15, 7 of 9 from the three-point line, and Gary Neal coming out of nowhere to score 24 for you and be the second best scorer and get 3 assists over no turnovers and 4 rebounds and stuff like that to have such an impressive performance, you know, anything goes. I agree with you that if the Finals MVP is decided, it's probably going to go to someone that, you know, is one of the consistent cornerstones and not someone that, you know, just got hot for a game or two, you know, because you have to consider, do you want the Finals MVP to be the one that won the final series, or do you want the Finals MVP to be the one that made sure the team got to the final series in the first place and then helped win it for them,
you know,
one of the most?
The Cedric Cornbread Maxwell, who we dedicated episode number 31 to, he won the Finals MVP in a year that Larry Bird took them to the finals and won his first championship. So I guess there's mm-hmm. a precedent. And mm-hmm. I do think that from memory, Cedric Maxwell was a bit of a more of a prominent player and a role player for them than perhaps Green or Neal are. So I guess it wasn't completely out of character. But then, you know, the early days, we saw some weird precedents. I mean, the very first Finals MVP went to Jerry West in a series that he lost to Bill Russell's Celtics when he won his 11th title. So, I mean, sometimes the early precedents are not necessarily great things to point to. But, yeah, well, once again,
yeah.
Duncan, Parker probably. Ginobili's been struggling a bit too much. Ginobili couldn't hang on to the ball at all in Game 2. Mm-hmm. He flat out sucked, basically, but he turned it around in Game 3, as did pretty much everyone on the Spurs. But
yeah. But if you had to give it to an outsider, I definitely see Danny Green as being the one that, you know, if the game plan ends up, you know, if it keeps working and, you know, the Heat just don't drown him to death on double teams or whatever they decide to throw at him, you know, Danny Green is a good candidate because he's been consistent. He's been very consistently great. One of the best players the Spurs have had in this series, both on offensive rating. I mean, he's far and ahead the best offensively rated player of the Spurs for Game 3, and still manages to be the second best defensively rated player. So if Danny Green keeps this up, and if Greg Popovich manages to find, you know, a game plan to give him the ball and for him to remain as consistent as he is, you could say that he was the player that made the difference and won the Spurs the series, because without him, you can only wonder if Popovich would have found another player to depend on as much as he does on Danny Green to make a difference through this series. But if we're going to get, you know, the performances throughout the season for the Spurs and who got them to the finals, as well as, you know, making sure to win them the finals, you know, it's interesting because you see that Danny Green was not really up there. His PER is just 14, so it's below league average for the season. Then in the playoffs, He has a 17.5, which again, you know, it's much lower than what Tony Parker has with 22.7, or Tim Duncan with 19.8, or even Kawhi Leonard with 18.4. So it remains to be seen. If the Spurs win this series, I think it's all going to go down to how Greg Popovich adjusts his game plan to what the Heat, to how the Heat respond to this blowout, because the Heat will respond in a way or another. If Danny Green remains such a big part of that, and if the league decides to give the award to the player that actually won just the final series, or to the player that, you know, also got them there.
Yeah, I just wanted to see Green break out the Michael Jordan shrug after one of those three points.
Yeah.
But any other thoughts on the finals so far, Ben?
No, I'm just. Yeah,
wait, disappointed.
I didn't get to see Game 3 because I was recovering from E3 and that, so
yeah.
So I'll be watching tomorrow's game while playing The Last of Us. So, but yeah, I know it's interesting to see how they'll bounce back and how they can stay consistent enough to potentially win the series. Right now, I'm sort of thinking, all right, what happens if they don't lose? What's going to happen to the team? How are they going to sort of, not so much restructure the roster or anything, but how are they going to adapt in a way to sort of make sure that, for instance, Wade stays as injury-free as possible, and basically how they're going to make sure that their key players don't fatigue for the playoffs. That's sort of where I'm looking at the moment. You know, in that worst case scenario that they lose.
Do you think Riley would return to the sidelines? Because that's the speculation.
There's been a lot of that over the last couple of years. So I think it.
I mean, three straight finals, win or lose, is hardly.
Yeah,
failure. Know. I mean, it may seem like failure with such the high expectations, and certainly the press conference, not one, not two, not three, etc.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, a lot of teams would kill to be in the position the Heat are, even if they did just get blown out in the finals. I mean, there's 28 other teams that aren't in the finals.
I think it's jumping the gun to come to that conclusion that it's going to happen. I mean, Coach Spo is a young coach, so this is good experience for him. So, you know, it'd be sort of a character building experience for him to be able to adjust and get to a potential level that like a Coach Pop or a Pat Riley or Phil Jackson have, you know. So
yeah. Well, speaking of young coaches, just one last little bit of news before we wrap up this today's podcast. The Nets have just announced that Jason Kidd will be their next head coach.
And the Pistons have announced that Maurice Cheeks is going to be their next coach. And none of these choices makes any sense to me.
Yeah.
Just to get this out.
Cheeks, I think, is going to be. We'll start with him, I guess. He's had a couple of decent seasons when he's had a reasonable roster at his disposal. So. The Pistons are a rebuilding
team. Keep repeating my point.
Yeah, so I guess he's going to be there until they get a bit better and they bring in someone better as well to take them to the next level, or they don't do well and he gets kicked out before his contract's up. I guess that's, you know.
I have no idea, but to be honest, in the season that we have such possibilities in the off season. To get some proper players for the team. We have 28 million in cap space, so a lot of money to spend. I don't know if Maurice Cheeks added to that, you know, added to that team as a coach.
Yeah, as a drawing card to lure a big name player. So, that's kind of.
They're saying that because we have Maurice Cheeks, you know, we might get Andre Iguodala interested. But the Pistons aren't moving from Detroit, so I'm still not seeing Iguodala interested in joining the Pistons.
Well, here's something. Phil Jackson is obviously involved with the Pistons, so presumably this was his recommendation, or are they just ignoring what Phil's saying? I mean, what's up with that?
I don't know. I think that I think this is just, from what I'm reading from Pistons writers, this is just Tom Gores join back and letting Joe Dumars do his thing, because Tom Gores was the one that insisted on Lawrence Frank when Joe Dumars wanted. I don't remember who Joe Dumars wanted back then, but and it didn't work out. So I guess now Tom Gores is doing Joe Dumars one last favor before kicking out both the coach and Joe Dumars to get the Pistons to move on. But, you know, after what he did and didn't work out, I guess he needs an excuse to kick Joe Dumars out, because right now he doesn't have one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just underestimating Maurice Cheeks, but I'm seeing no excitement whatsoever from any of the Pistons writers I follow. So I can't. I'm just saying this, you know, thing that, you know, everybody feels right now.
Well, for Kidd, he's this is going to be one of the quickest transitions from player to coach since the player coach days that went out of fashion sort of in the 60s and 70s. We haven't seen much of that, if any, since then, except for perhaps the occasional unofficial assistant coach who's I think Tree Rollins was a bit of a former center, finished his career with the Orlando Magic, was kind of half an assistant coach for the most part, and suited up occasionally as a member of the active roster. But we, apart from that, we haven't seen any head coach / star players along the lines of Bill Russell when he took over Red Auerbach in the 60s. And this obviously is not the case because he is retired. But again, one of the quickest transitions to the sidelines we've seen in quite some time. And once again, I mean, he's obviously a fantastic point guard, one of the greatest that we've seen. But no coaching experience. I mean, is he going to be that much better than Vinny Del Negro, for example?
I don't know. Like we discussed before the podcast started, I think it's just part of the, we splash big, we do gimmicks to get people interesting, and then lose a lot. I don't know.
To the ghost of the Chicago Bulls in the first round.
Yeah.
Apparently, from what I've heard, is the talks between the kid, or between Kidd and the Nets, had been going on for a couple of weeks. So it wasn't just sort of like off the bat.
Yeah, from the moment the Knicks got eliminated, basically.
Yeah.
So you're thinking that Jason Kidd retired after having made a backstage deal with the Nets to start coaching?
Yeah, that was sort of like the golden handshake sort of deal, or under the table sort of deal. And yeah, because, I mean, yeah, it seems like it happened pretty quick, but if they're... The talk is true that this has sort of been in the talks for a couple of weeks. Then yeah, it explains why the retirement so soon and that. So yeah,
I guess it's whether it brings much success to Brooklyn is remains to be seen. They've got a decent roster, obviously a couple of good players, a couple of all star players, but I guess it's interesting and gimmicky if nothing else. So
yeah,
it'll be. And as the Lakers proved this season, the sideshow is always entertaining, even if the results aren't there in the win column.
Great. Speaking of sort of sideshows, you know how Jay-Z's got his little player agents?
Yep. Becoming an agent now, yeah.
Yep. Apparently, he may sign Kevin Durant. Like, Kevin Durant dumped his current agents, and apparently...
Yeah, his new agency, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, he's locked up for a long time in Oklahoma City, so
yep.
Probably not going to be much of a change there, and they should be doing better once Westbrook's back. But yeah, certainly interesting to get a high profile, someone as high profile as Durant in the league already. Okay. But then, you know, it's Jay-Z. It's not like he's just some guy off the street. He's a well known celebrity, so
yeah.
The pull is there. I mean. Hey, you got Charles Barkley to appear in a video game, so that's the man has some power. No design sense for menus, but certainly some stroke in the world. But is that about it for this week?
Oh, yeah.
Well, not this week, since we have one more. Getting used to wrapping up podcasts for the week, but we have been podcasting all week, and once again, we do appreciate everyone tuning in and hearing our thoughts every day. We will be coming at you tomorrow with one more podcast where I guess we'll summarize our thoughts and talk about any other news that comes out. But, I mean, if I had to make a prediction, guys, I'm guessing we're not going to get a whole lot of info on the video game, the basketball games, maybe just another interview or snippet repeating some of the same points we've seen before. But yeah. I guess we'll mention anything that's worth giving a couple of minutes of mention to and talk about for 40 minutes. But
I still think E3 will close with a surprise reveal of a game or you know, sort of something we didn't expect sort of thing. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. So there could be something we could end up talking about, whether it may not be NBA gaming related in that, but we'll see what happens.
Well, if it's Fallout, I can do a 5-hour podcast on that. and if it's not, I refuse to play video games ever again for 12 hours.
You know what I've noticed by watching 2K's community live stream?
No Fallout?
WWE has an enormous amount of fans. That chat room, whenever the 2K live stream is going on, is annoying. So annoying. Every message, not every other message, every message is, so was WWE 2K14, so was WWE 2K14. I guess WWE is a really popular organization and a really popular, how should I say this?
Brand.
Not brand, entity. I'm looking for, I wanted to say sport, but it's
They call themselves sports entertainment, is the term that Vince McMahon.
I would say spectacle. It's a very popular
spectacle. Yeah, that's a good word for wrestling, yeah.
It will be interesting since this is the last day that, at least, you know, here in Greece, in Australia as well, it's June 13th. It's going to be interesting to see if the last day of 2K's live stream has any additional news as far as NBA 2K14 and even WWE 2K14 or all the other games that are under 2K's brand. Any news pop up? I will be watching it and coming tomorrow with any news that show up. And I'm sure, you know, the other two guys that are on the podcast will be very excited for whatever Live 14 brings out. So.
And we'll have game four of the finals as well. So.
Yeah, sure. We'll have, again, very little, yet so plenty to talk about.
That's right. But I think as we wrap this up, this is actually our shortest episode in some time, just slightly over an hour and a half. So enjoy our shortest ever episode. And as we said yesterday, please feel free to give us your comments, as always, on the episode, what you like, what you didn't like, whether you feel... you'd like the 2-hour Leftos monologue. whether you'd like me to try and stumble and stammer my way through a 10-minute monologue.
And if you'd like to see me sleep through mine.
Yes. If you like any of that stuff or have any kind of feedback, let us know. And certainly your thoughts on what we talked about as well, your impressions. And
Andrew, since you said that, the interesting tidbit of trivia here is that we haven't done a podcast that's just an hour and 30 minutes ever since you joined the podcast. The first podcast we did together, which was episode 7, was a minute and 1 hour and 34 minutes.
So 34.
Carry up. Make it shorter.
We'll have to wrap up then. So just remember, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNLSC. Follow us on Twitter, @TheNLSC. Keep it locked to TheNLSC, NBA-live.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on something that hasn't been invented yet. Please do. So, until tomorrow and part 4, our final part of our E3 2013 series, I'm Andrew.
I'm Leftos.
And I'm Arcane.
Tune in tomorrow. See you guys.
Bye.